when I've mentored people along my path, one of the first things I'll always say is do not put the pressure on your passion to earn you a living. Like you wouldn't give birth to a newborn baby and expect it to start paying rent.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that we admire that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well, especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave us a review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. As always, I'm kicking off this episode with a My Magnetic story from the Facebook group. I still need to do unblocked opulence. Life's been hard, y'all, and I've been poor. But through the DREs, reparent, shadow, and my own version of unblocking a lot of money issues, I manifested $2,000 for my move to Oregon. I'd like more before the official move date, and I'm really working on it, but I had to share this recent win. I can just imagine what will happen when I actually do unblocked opulence. I'm so happy. This moving money has been a big source of stress for me lately, and I feel so much more relaxed now. I really like this one because it parallels when I was very, very first manifesting my move from my very small town up north where we have the retreat house now to LA. And it's so funny how it was also $2,000 that I was manifesting at the time. And it ended up totally miraculously coming through my uncle, which was such a score and a win. And like the formula, which I wasn't fully aware of at the time, what's so crazy is I had been going down to LA a lot for auditions, for commercial auditions. And to me, even though my mom was from LA, I still grew up in a really small town where that seemed super overwhelming to move there by myself, young. But because I had been going, I was staying all the time with my expander, my cousin, and all of his friends that were at UCLA. So I would kind of get to see how their life was, how they budgeted. And a lot of them had the support from their family. But I also got to see how you could kind of get a good quality of life-ish without that. So I had those as expanders. I was going down all of the time. And then my uncle really came through and I manifested this $2,000. And what's so wild is because it was so scary for me, I deferred from college, even though everybody was like, what are you doing? Oh my God, you're going to LA to act and not go to school. But I really jumped off that cliff. And when I got here to LA, within I think 2 months, I ended up booking my first national commercial, which paid me an amazing amount of money. And I was able then to even close a portal and offer that $2,000 back to my uncle, who didn't take it back because he's Iranian. And if anybody knows any Iranian, you know, culture, they're so generous and loving, especially to their children and family and friends. But I just wanted to share that because it was a really beautiful parallel. Anybody can do it. It really parallels the formula. And I'm super, super proud of this person. I know more is to come. And yes, get in the pathway and do unblocked opulence because that will super speed and take the whole money situation to the next level if you really do open those portals and you do the work. You don't just intellectualize, but you actually take the steps. So rather than a trigger today, I thought I would update you on some stuff because I feel like I've been really present at the house and not able to communicate with you guys. So a couple of updates in the pathway. We now have full moon unblocked, which I know thousands of you participated in. I myself did as well. It was super healing and helpful. And we're going to be doing that as a group every single full moon. So it's just going to become more and more and more powerful. And something new and exciting will be released in it as well. And I'd say a month or two. So look forward to that. It's also the perfect time to gather together your unblocked villages, which anytime you sign into the pathway, you can just go look for the village near you. There's a lot that are gathering and connecting. And if you don't already have one, it gives you guidelines of how to create one. So I highly recommend it. This will super speed your manifestation process because it's really giving you actionable steps that hold you accountable every 28-day lunar cycle. That's why I shared my own process with you. Next, we have the house. The house is really fun. It's come along. Many of you are seeing on Instagram that I've now had the chance to move into the interior and install it. And we're about to move into phase two, which is the exterior, the outdoor bathroom, clawfoot shower situation, the outdoor build out of the infrared sauna. And then we move into phase three, which will be the full back unit cabins for completing the retreat experience. Because in the beginning, we're going to be launching very soon, I think it's May, that people can go on their own solo retreat or with a couple of their unblocked, you know, village friends or friends, and they can access all the workshops and do it there and have this whole wellness experience in Yosemite with our guidelines of what you can do, where to go, where to hike, all that good stuff. And then later this year, we'll actually be totally releasing it as a retreat space. The only holdup has been weather, snow and rain. Sadly, I've been so bummed about all season because it really drastically holds up this construction situation. Also in the pathway, we have the upgraded daily reprogramming exercise now with one whole new self-worth evaluation step in it, along with many daily reprogramming exercises. We even just added a brand new one inside of there. So make sure you're keeping up with that. I prescribe that people do it at least 3 to 4 times a week. And now you have variety, some on shadow and inner child reintegration, health and body, prosperity. You have a lot of options now. So there's no excuse. Do your daily reprogramming exercise. Also, another really quick way to see this whole process speed up. And lastly, the speaking tour. We've had to push that out just a tiny bit. I keep telling the girls, let's put it back and put it back because I'm so full force at the house. So it looks like now it's going to be East Coast, West Coast, September, Europe in October. And we will be letting you know when those ticket sales go up. You guys have been asking. So that's why I wanted to hop in here. Next week, I'll go back to triggers, but I really just wanted to communicate and tell you what's going on, what's new, all the exciting stuff. And yeah, I'm so stoked to have you. So many of you are doing the pathway and killing it. And I'm seeing all of the feedback in the Facebook group. And it's really cool and overwhelming. Keep the My Magnetic stories coming in. Keep updating what you're up to. And we behind the scenes are actually thinking of a lot of really cool content to start putting out soon for everyone to support you in that process. So thank you for being here. And now we'll move into the guest. Today's guest, Ruby Warrington, I think is probably a household name with this community. She is the founder of The Numinous, which is a very beautiful, mystical site on astrology and basically everything spiritual under the sun that you could be interested in. She's also the author of 2 books, the most recent one we get into on this podcast, something that I myself am, I sort of fell into. The book is called Sober Curious, and it's just all about the questions of what life is like in sobriety, not necessarily just through the model of AA, but just people like me who are spiritual and can't really drink or don't drink because it's too much for the body or whatever variation that is for somebody else who is kind of dealing with sobriety or curious about sobriety or going down that rabbit hole. I think you'll find this episode extremely expansive if you're the person who had your dream job according to society, but decided it wasn't as fulfilling as you thought it would be. So you pivoted into becoming an entrepreneur just as she has. She's also been with her husband, I think now of 20 years, and they're still incredibly compatible and in love. She moved all the way from London to New York and considers the West Coast now. So she's a great expander for that, for really hopping around, even really well established into her career and just popping around and following her heart. This episode is just going to be expansive for many reasons, so I'm going to stop talking and let you all get into it and enjoy it now. Welcome back to the Expanded Podcast. We're here with, I think, very little introduction will be needed when I actually record the introduction. Ruby Warrington of The Numinous, mm-hmm. and out with her new book, So We're Curious.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I think a really big expander for many people out there. So we're going to cruise right into it.
I love it.
Give us your cultural background and upbringing.
I'm British. I'm British by birth. Yeah. And I haven't done any sort of like DNA testing. But I believe, I love it. I'm going really deep with you right off the bat.
Yeah, let's get in there.
I believe there's some Scandinavian heritage happening.
You look like it.
Having spoken to my father about the kind of earliest like recorded gravestone on his side of the family, mm-hmm. is in a part of England that was once known as Daneland.
Oh.
I didn't even know this was part of the English history.
Well, I was actually reading weirdly a book when I was in New York last. I would just let my intuition guide me to a book, and it's called like The New Dublin or whatever, and it dates back to the 1500s. And it was all about how the Vikings and everything had conquered much of England and Ireland.
Mm.
Had no clue.
So there we go.
Yeah.
So to go way back,
yeah.
I believe maybe some Scandinavian British heritage happening. But yeah, I grew up in London born and bred. Although I had a few sort of early formative years in a very wild part of the English countryside, a county known as Suffolk, which was really, I'm so happy that my mother chose to leave London to bring myself and my brother up there. It was a real wilderness in many ways. And we had so much freedom as kids to really just kind of roam and play and be in nature. And that was my kind of early upbringing.
And what was her decision to pop you guys over there?
It's complicated in a way. My father didn't come with us. They had a kind of a long distance relationship. He stayed in London, and I feel there were possibly issues between them. But I think more than anything, she knew that she wanted to raise her children close to nature, and that she wanted us to be able to have that free outdoor life. She's originally from that part of the UK as well.
Oh.
Her mother died when she was very young, and I think she probably felt the lack of a mother when she became a mother, and perhaps traveling back to that area helped her feel more connected to her heritage. In a way.
What's her sign?
She's Pisces.
And you're an Aries.
Yeah.
That's Alexandra told us that yesterday.
Right. Okay. So Alexandra has the same birthday as my mom.
Wow.
Yes.
Look at that connection. Wow.
Totally. And it's very interesting. My mom is a deeply emotional human, but also very practical and very sharp.
Wow.
She became a psychotherapist later in life, having kind of healed herself with talk therapy in many ways. And the communication skills she taught me are exactly how Alexandra communicates. And it's a very emotional communication, but at the same time, very direct. And I so appreciate that. Like someone who can just be really real about the emotional undercurrent of what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and make no apology for it,
mm-hmm.
and demand that level of depth. It's actually quite rare to find people who talk like, who communicate that way.
Every Pisces I know is like that. Every one of them. In fact,
kind of
one
true.
Of my really close Piscean friends, poor thing, I think we had a falling out for a year because of that, and I was so in my shadow, and you know, but now I really appreciate it.
Right.
For exactly
it
what you're saying.
It can be very it can be challenging and confronting, yeah. But I like that little connection.
Wow. And then, so what about when you guys pop back to London, what was that like?
So yeah, then I kind of grew up. I actually was itching to get back to London. I always was really drawn in by the glamour of city life. And also I think wanted to be close to my dad. I think I actually really missed him. As a young child, I missed his presence. So I was glad to be near him again, although he had remarried by that point and had quite a separate life.
Mm-hmm.
We did spend more time with him when we lived in London. But yeah, I always just loved the pulse and the energy of the city life. And I'm still very much a city person. I love getting into nature when I'm there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also am very drawn in by the energy of the city, in quite an addictive way, actually. But yeah, always felt London was just super glamorous and vibrant, and was a pretty nerdy teenager, although desperate not to be, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Trying so hard to be cool.
Yeah. And of course, that meant drinking and drugs and all the things. So all of that happened too. And then when I was 16, met a much older guy who was a weed dealer and kind of really, yeah, we entered a long-term relationship, which was not good mm-hmm. at all. And I've written about that relationship in both my books, actually, yeah.
And how long were you in that?
6 years.
And living together?
Mm-hmm.
And what was sort of the dynamic like between two of you?
He was extremely controlling. He, interestingly, thinking of the sober curious thing, he was a weed evangelist, you know? Thought it was God's gift to the world. Thought that alcohol, on the other hand, was like the devil's mm-hmm. like juice, you know? So I was pretty much banned from drinking alcohol when we were together. He was very, very domineering, very commanding. I really cut myself off from family and friends the whole time we were together.
Oh, the whole shebang.
I developed an eating disorder, like the whole thing.
Oh,
was smoking extremely strong weed every day. Still managed to like graduate at the top of my class after college.
Aries. They're all my sisters like that. They're amazing.
We'll get through. But no, I mean, I'm glad I even took myself to college because I really hadn't planned to. But after a couple of years of working like retail, I just realized there was more to life mm-hmm. and that I was going to go to college. He was quite anti, as you can imagine, me going to college.
Sure. That meant having freedom and getting away.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he knew that that would... Yeah, it would give me an outlet to escape, which essentially is what happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of, I had quite an intense teenage years. But mm-hmm. actually, and I remember at the time feeling it was really heavy and like, it was a lot to be experiencing. And I felt very oppressed. However, looking back, I'm kind of grateful because it gave me so much strength. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I had a Chinese medicine face reading session the other day.
What did they say?
She said, there's something about my chin that she was like, you've experienced like real oppression in your life to the point that you will never let that happen to you again.
Amazing.
And I really feel that I will never let that happen mm-hmm. to me again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And actually saving myself in that situation, mustering the courage to like leave and walk away was so empowering.
That's huge for anybody sitting there right now that's in that relationship dynamic. I was in a similar one to that. And I've been him in relationships in a very mild way, you know, out of all of my dysfunction and childhood upbringing. So thank you for sharing that expansion. What was the breaking point that made you finally go, I've got to go, I have the courage? Or how did you escape it?
Well, interesting. There were two things that coincided. He was also, I mean, he just the ultimate sleaze. Have you seen that movie, Spring Breakers?
No.
Okay.
Is it the
character, the James Franco, for anyone listening, the James Franco character in that movie is basically my ex. Anyway, he was constantly trying to instigate three ways and like that whole thing. And then he sort of, because he could see, I went to fashion journalism school. I think he could see, and I was doing really well, despite being in this like traumatized state. He could see I was going to have an interesting career there. And so he kind of started pivoting towards this angle and set up some kind of weird agency where he'd started working with like actors and models. And there was one woman in particular. He was even suggesting he wanted her to move in with us. He basically was telling me that he was starting a relationship with her.
Wow.
So there was that. But it was that in conjunction with the fact I was so proud of the work I was doing and I could see my career going to mm-hmm. happen as well. And I was like, he cannot come anywhere near this.
Oh, yeah.
This is mine.
Wow.
And he is not coming anywhere near it. So it was more like my pride and my protection I felt about my career and my path going forward. I didn't want him to sully mm-hmm. or like dirty. That was it. That was what gave me the courage.
A way, at the bottom of that, it was kind of really following your passion, your love, and having the self-worth around it.
Self-worth, it was. Wow. It really was finding my self-worth. I graduated at the top of my class.
I'm like, incredible.
I couldn't believe it. When they phoned to tell me, I was like, me? Kidding? I didn't understand that about myself. And receiving that accolade, which although it was kind of an external validation, it was still like, oh, okay, yeah, there's more for me than this life, mm-hmm. you know?
I always like to say it sort of reflects back vision holding of where you're headed, the potential of where you can go. It's like it shows you, mm-hmm. it builds this, breathes this self-worth into you. I love that.
Yeah. And my tutor, my third year tutor, is still a mentor of mine. He's probably one of the only mentors I've actually really ever had. Still in contact with him. We meet up when I go back to London.
Incredible.
All the time. He's great.
Oh, amazing that you have that.
Yes.
Well, give us the trajectory of how you ended up from there to the Numinous.
So from there, as soon as I graduated, I started writing for magazines in London and had a really quite successful career in magazines in London, culminating with a job at the Sunday Times Style magazine, which is a really prestigious, glossy supplement with the Sunday newspaper. It's a bit like Tea magazine, but weekly. And I was features editor there. And a few years into that job, or maybe a couple of years into that job, I remember just really having this huge sense of, it was more than disappointment. It was like, oh no. Because I'm like, this is everything I've been working towards and it's not enough.
Yeah.
Oh no.
I know. That moment is so hard when it hits you.
I was like, but this is all I wanted.
Yeah.
What? This is it?
Yeah. I have it all and I'm not happy. Or it's not. It's not
just
exactly.
Not enough. Yeah. It wasn't fulfilling me. It was challenging and exciting and glamorous, like so glamorous. But it wasn't fulfilling at all. Mm-hmm. And that was really another heavy moment. And that was when I kind of started thinking about, well, okay, because I didn't want to be like the editor. I didn't want to move higher up the ladder because it just became more and more political. I could see it was quite kind of poisonous up at the top. And I was like, I don't want to be in that kind of corporate journalism world. I want to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began thinking like, well, what could I just never get bored about? Like, what am I eternally curious about? And astrology was the thing that came up. I had always been really interested in it, but very much in the closet behind the scenes because it was not cool. It's like 10, 11 years ago.
And even in London, like England's so far. But, so, well, not always. They're trying. But back then, I bet it was really bad.
It's opening up there a lot. And I think actually the Numinous has been a large part of that, you know,
awesome.
Which is really cool. But yeah, I was like, astrology, why don't I learn about astrology? Maybe one day I could like read, maybe one day, who knows? So I introduced myself to our in-house astrologer at the Sunday Times and she sort of mentored me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't really teach me astrology, but she taught me about lots of other things and would invite me over to her loft and show me all these books about different mystical subjects. And it felt a bit like going to Harry, it was a bit like Harry Potter.
Oh yeah, amazing.
It was a bit like going to Hogwarts and I was just like, this is what I've been missing.
Yes.
Not only this is what I've been looking for, but this is what has been missing on like a deep level, you know,
soul
level. And not just the interest in these topics, but what they could teach me about myself and the world. And I realized that there wasn't very quickly, she was the first person who used the word numinous in a conversation with me. And I was just like, what is that word? It was like hypnotic to me straight away. And I realized very quickly there wasn't at the time, 2010 probably, a publication that covered these subjects in a way that made them appealing, relevant, modern, chic, elegant. Everything was still very crunchy and very like crushed velvet.
Oh man,
stuff.
I can see it all.
You know, it was just like
spells and capes.
Yeah, either the spells and the capes or just kind of like websites from like 1985.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can see the
yellow
text,
background,
HTML.
Like different HTML, like weird shape, different text. Like it was just like there wasn't anything that had made it that married my kind of fashion magazine sensibilities. But yet I knew that so many people in the fashion industry, in particular, stylists, makeup artists, like all the people, like a lot of the people I kind of would cross paths with. Once you opened the door. They were fascinated and everyone wanted to know more. And everyone was like, everyone secretly had like a shaman in the wings or like a tarot reader they would go to.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's something here. So that was where the idea for the Numinous came from. And then of course, the universe caught up with me fairly quickly. And my husband got a job in New York, probably about 6 or 7 months after I'd begun to think about creating the Numinous. And I moved with him and obviously left my job behind and found myself in New York, with this time on my hands to put this thing, put the wheels in motion to actually do this thing.
Yeah.
And I remember it was February 18th, 2012 was when I moved. And that spring equinox, so a month later, we walked down to the park on the west side at sunset. And I'd read somewhere about a ritual where you for the equinox had like crushed eggshells to symbolize new beginnings. And I remember we took some quail's eggs down there and kind of like crushed up the shells and then threw them onto the river and was like, okay, this is it, my commitment. I'm going to do this. I'm not just going to think about it. I'm actually going to make it happen. So yeah, that was how the numinous.
How long did it take to take off? Because it's totally acclaimed. People love the numinous. Yeah, it did take
a
minute.
It took a while. I mean, I guess it was, yeah, I didn't really properly in its current format, and I've since done another rebrand, properly started talking about it and publishing on it regularly in like summer 2013.
Okay.
So it's probably a year of just kind of messing around with WordPress and like working it out. And meanwhile, building a career as a freelance journalist, because I still was very much like, I'm going to be a freelance journalist now. I still love writing. I'm going to make money.
This is what I call a bridge job.
Yes. And I remember you speaking about this at the Good Fest, and it's something that when I mentor people along my path, one of the first things I'll always say is do not put the pressure on your passion to earn you a living. Like you wouldn't give birth to a newborn baby and expect it to start paying rent. Yeah. Like right off the bat, you know,
it's like. It's a great analogy. That's actually a fantastic analogy.
You would educate it, clothe it, wait for it to be able to speak, like you know,
walk,
like, walk even, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I was a very busy and successful then freelancer, and it, you know, again, was kind of glamorous and cool. And I was like, this has worked out really well. Although at the same time, it was quite destabilizing to leave behind my family and my roots and all of my friends and my whole identity, actually. So much of my identity was wrapped up in my, I'm a Sunday Times journalist. You know, there's much ego in that.
So much. I know, New York Times writers. And it's their whole thing. You're a celebrity.
You kind of are a celebrity. You're treated that way. It's like every door opens, free this, free that. Like it's really, and it was a real kick in the guts in a way to be like, oh, it wasn't me they loved.
Yeah.
It was that email address.
Yeah. Totally. Oh, yeah.
It was hard. Yeah. It's hard. So that was a kind of a reckoning in a way. But if anything, it made me more passionate about making the numinous into something I could be really proud of, that I could create for myself. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I mean, my goodness, like if I used to get like free clothes and makeup and stuff, now I was getting free healing sessions.
I know, this is way better.
I mean.
Yeah, you're like, I'll buy the clothes and makeup.
Now I'm getting like a free session with Mama Medicine.
Exactly.
And like free breath works. And I'm not only am I having this incredible awakening to a new kind of social life and scene, I'm healing
absolutely.
So much is actually being healed in this process. And that was kind of the subject of my first book, Material Girl, Mystical World.
How did that one do for the, because you always have the people that are like, I'm going to start a blog and write a book. That's the dream. Give us the real look at that scope. I mean, because I think I started what was Free and Native around the same time that you started the numinous. And that was my exact thing. It was a holistic blog. And I was like, oh, everything's really crunchy out there or really like fitnessy. And I was like, there's something modern. There's a niche that can be fit here. Mm. And I've never, ever had an intention to write a book. We have one in the process right now. And I'm already like, I feel so bad for my agent because I'm like, I don't want to do it. But I want you to give the real insight, expanding scope of what really goes into that, what that looks like, how it did, all that.
Well, it's a great example of manifestation, I believe, and magnetism. Because I had, from when I was a kid, always loved reading. I'd always wanted to write a book. I found my way to journalism as a way to use my writing, although it wasn't necessarily a career that I'd thought I would go into. I wanted to work in fashion, more like styling. And over the years, I kind of like dabbled with writing a bit of fiction here and there. And I just couldn't, it just wasn't good. I knew it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get it to work. So I kind of gave up on the idea and then was very happily doing my journalism, writing articles, more kind of like social trend pieces. I always really loved interviewing people and kind of like doing like psychological analysis of them.
Yeah, sure. Get in there.
Yeah, you know.
Why they function the way
exactly.
they do.
Exactly. And look at their birth charts, of course. Every interviewee ever, I'd always be like, right, Alexa Chung, let's check out this Pluto action.
Yeah, her Saturn, what's going on there?
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, her Venus, no wonder it's a breeze. Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
And why she's so beautiful, you know.
Exactly. So, but about a year after the numinous had fully launched, it was fall 2014, I got an editor from someone at HarperCollins being like, hey,
We've seen what you're doing with this site. It's so fresh and different the way you're writing about these subjects. Do you have a book proposal you'd want to send us? And I was just like, does this even happen?
Well, I have the chills.
The common wisdom is to get a book deal means knocking on tons of doors, getting rejected a gazillion
times.
Sending
your proposal out everywhere,
And now this had just kind of come to me before I even had a proposal. And at the time, I had just started working with a management company in the UK who helped me get a proposal together pretty quickly and send it back over to them.
Great.
So that was how the book came about. And I believe, truly believe it's because I was putting all of my passion, all of my energy into this passion. I was like 100% in it. I was living it. I was breathing it. And that energy attracted in what I'd always wanted, which was a book deal. Because I had given up on writing books. I didn't think that was my path at all. And then writing the book was really fun. I love writing. It's what I do. It's what I do best. I absolutely love it.
Amazing.
So writing the book was fantastic. I had a really great editor who's just like, it was like being in like a year's therapy writing the book, basically. Because she was so, she's just so on point. Really cool. So yeah, but then the book coming out was tough. It was hard. It was another expansion point, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was, again, really tough on the ego. I realized I had so much. I wanted it to be liked so much.
Yeah.
And it really hurt when people didn't like it.
Oh, sure. It's a baby. It's like saying that it's ugly or something. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And then pivot us into, I want the whole sober curious.
Sober curious.
Because I've been sober, not just like my body can't handle booze for... and drugs anymore, unfortunately. There are points where I'm like, in France, the south of France, I'd like a rosé, but it's the more my consciousness grows, like I cannot do anything. I'm too sensitive. I think for like 3 or 4 years now. Give us the whole scoop, because I think this book especially is going to pique a lot of curiosity.
Yeah, totally. Well, I want to hear more about your story too, because I'm really curious about other people's, like all of the different and very diverse journeys that people have to living without alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a very rigid idea of what that looks like. If a person doesn't drink or is sober, it means one thing. Yeah. It means they're an alcoholic and they're in AA and that's that.
Totally. And it has a whole persona around
so
it. It's
not
appealing.
Stigma. So there's a lot of shame in that sometimes. And it's just extremely limiting when you think about the range of human experience and the diversity
Absolutely.
Of us as
and
individuals.
All of it's good, but yes, there's a vast spectrum.
So behind the scenes of this transformation I was experiencing through engaging all of these in all of these numinous practices, I had been questioning my alcohol use. I guess when I left that first relationship, I felt like I had some catching up to do in a way. All of my friends had drunk a lot through college. I hadn't really joined in. Possibly one of the reasons I did so well.
But sure.
I mean, I didn't drink through college.
Wow.
But as soon as I left him and as soon as I kind of entered the London journalism scene, I very quickly developed a really high tolerance for alcohol and was drinking the same as most Brits.
Well, yeah, the full, like even a 12 a cider, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, it was, when I look back now, I'm like, it's excessive, but it's by no means abnormal. In fact,
totally.
It's the norm. In fact, I probably drank less than a lot of people Absolutely. In my industry, a lot of my peers. So I never considered myself to have a drinking problem. However, around the same time, I was having this intense kind of existential dis-ease in my old job of just like, is this it? That was coinciding with, and is alcohol making this worse? Like, I was really beginning to question the impact that it was having on my overall well-being, but also on my inspiration, on my confidence levels, on my enjoyment of life. I mean, which is so ironic because we drink to have fun and have a good time. And yet I was definitely not having fun and having a good time at that period in my life. Life just felt so monotonous and one note. It's kind of like, get through the week, get through my to-do lists, drink at the weekend to relax, and then start all again on Monday. Oof. And it was just like,
yeah.
And that was all I saw around me. That's how everyone I knew was operating. And it is how many people operate.
It is, yeah.
It is how the majority of people operate.
And I feel like a very small percentage of society likes that. Mm. There is a percentage that's made for it and it works well and it's actually the perfect fit. Like I would say like a lot of Torrens, like that is perfect. But for, I mean, obviously a lot of the community here is looking how to manifest something else. So
yes, exactly.
That is really daunting.
And I think what you said about raising consciousness, I mean, I'll probably come on to that in a little bit. So anyway, I moved to New York with this questioning already having begun. Is alcohol contributing to me feeling hopeless? Uninspired. I don't have anything left to give. Like, and actually my answer yes is now yes it was. But slowly I was beginning to just kind of like drink less or be in situations where I would have drunk without drinking, just experimenting with how it felt to drink and not to drink. Mm-hmm. And then couple this with finding all of these numinous practices, not to mention the incredible community of individuals that I was now immersing myself in New York, many of whom did not drink, mm-hmm. had no desire to drink. I was really realizing that so many of the things I had been looking for in alcohol, relaxation, joy, transcendence, connection, magic, mm-hmm. even. I mm-hmm. think many people
spirits.
Take drugs. Spirit,
yeah.
right? Spirit, yeah. a connection to spirit.
Yeah.
I was having in these other experiences. And it really shone a light on how when I used alcohol to have those experiences, there was such a high price to pay,
mm-hmm.
meaning days lost to just feeling so
the anxiety out of track. That comes.
I mean,
everything.
I really thought the anxiety, you know, they call it getting out of it. Like when you drink, you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that being on this kind of entrepreneurial path of creating the numinous, it required so much focus, self-belief. It was almost like I had to be deeply in this groove. I had to create first I had to create the groove for myself.
And ground.
Then I had to like get into the groove and like just stick it and be like, I'm in it. And whenever I drank and got out of it, I'd be like, oh, it's going to take me days to get back to that place of like just where I know I need to be to actually make this happen. Because it's not like, I mean, it's not like you just, oh, I think I'll create a blog that loads of people read and that makes a living and like,
no, I think a lot of people
overnight.
People intend to do that, but it's like 14-hour days when you're
14
starting
14-hour days, seven days a week. You're always on it and in it. And so alcohol just for the few hours of respite I might get from whatever stress I was feeling, the price for that felt shockingly, obnoxiously high. And I was just like, no, this, no. No.
Yeah.
But because alcohol is so ingrained and we live in such a dominant drinking culture where to be a non-drinker, you're consciously making yourself an outsider, mm-hmm. which goes against all of our biology.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult to consciously choose that, mm-hmm. you know? It was difficult to completely stop. And so I did take myself to a couple of AA meetings after a few years, even though I was very, very rarely drinking. There were certain circumstances I found it very difficult not to have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to AA, I realized that this wasn't my community. It wasn't my story,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
What I was hearing shared about in those meetings did not reflect my experiences with alcohol. I didn't feel like I was powerless over mm-hmm. alcohol. I didn't identify with the label alcoholic. It wasn't my path.
Yeah.
But what I realized was that there, in that case, there needed to be something, some other way to acknowledge that this journey I was on, because it was really, it's really intense.
It is and unique. And like you're saying, it's a small percentage of society.
Yeah.
But they
right?
need somewhere to go and a reference and guidance.
Exactly. Exactly. For AA. But what I also realized from speaking to other friends and just very kind of anecdotally that many more people than would ever really openly talk about it. We're having the same conflicted feelings about alcohol
mm-hmm.
than we would ever really consider. And so I decided to start hosting events to kind of talk about this, to actually open it up a bit and
Great.
Go, hey, can we just have a conversation about the fact that all of us, often without question, as soon as we become adults, often before, start using a highly addictive, psychoactive, mood-altering substance
mm-hmm.
on a weekly basis. As the norm, like, how did that become normal? This is not normal.
Yeah,
it doesn't need to be. How is that normal?
Yeah,
why do we do that?
It's great that you guys were just inquisitive. It's, I mean, a lot of people don't stop to ask these questions.
This is what I mean. This is what Sober Curious is about. It's like being actually questioning the default, questioning the norm. Going, just because this is normal doesn't mean that it's right.
Yeah,
and doesn't mean that it works for everybody. In fact, it blatantly
has the opposite effect for many people.
Yeah.
You know? So I just, yeah, I want it. And I've realized that. So then it was about 6 months after my first book came out. I was just coming down off the roller coaster of having to be this extroverted, out there, self-promoting person that I'm just like,
so hard.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Just coming out of that and feeling normal again and getting really excited about having my time to put back into the Numinous. And because it had kind of been, as much as the book was connected to it, was kind of treading water with that a bit while it was happening. I got a new agent and I kind of was like, you know, this Sober Curious events, they're getting bigger and bigger. And do you think should I pitch a book on this? And she was just like, yes, this is, now is the time. You really should. So I pitched it and got a deal 6 months after my first book came out.
Wow.
And that was a year ago.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode that I hope you're finding very expanding to tell you about a special offer that you won't find anywhere else but here. So with the code JOURNEY, that's capital JOURNEY, simply put that in order to receive your first month off free for the pathway or 10% off any of the a la carte. And once you're in the pathway, there's a suggestion of exactly what you should follow, starting with a formula and magnetism workshop, moving into reparent and shadow, and then you'll move through, if you're calling in a career, opulence, you'll move through partnership if you're calling that in. And of course, everybody should be doing the daily reprogramming exercise. The beautiful thing about the pathway as well is that you will have access to the Facebook group, which is the like-minded community you've probably been manifesting. And it gives you access to all of the Unblock villages that are meeting up around the world. So you'll be able to find one in hopefully your neighborhood, and you get full access to my class, which is twice a month called Supported, where you can write in any question you're having about your manifestation process or manifestation in order to have me answer your question. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
The book tells my own story of how I developed this questioning mindset around drinking. And then it also goes really, I mean, and it, you know, gives all of the things that I've learned along the journey, both for myself and sort of from the experiences of the community I've created around it. And just many observations about how we as a society use alcohol, what it says about us as a society and our values, and then it goes into much more of the deep stuff as well, which is many of the things that what we may be unwilling to be present with, unable to be present with, mm-hmm. That we may be using alcohol and other substances to ignore,
mm-hmm.
ultimately how to address or how to begin to address healing those things. So yeah, it goes pretty deep.
Amazing.
And in terms of the consciousness piece, I mean, I really, because people often say to me, do you drink now? But you still, because I'm not sober. Mm-hmm. I'm not teetotal.
Mm-hmm.
I could have a glass of wine and it wouldn't be compromising my sobriety. I wouldn't see it as a relapse or anything like that. However, when I drink alcohol now, it's like, it feels so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I can just feel this heaviness in my body almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel kind of nauseous. I can literally feel my senses just closing down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find any pleasure in it anymore. And kind of like you, I'm like, damn.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, damn.
I know, if only I could just fun. Be, ignorance was bliss.
I literally found myself saying that internally a few times in the past few months. Ignorance really is bliss. I can't understand where that came from.
I know, it's so true. But like you, like the experience that'll happen to me, you know, we were all, I think it was last summer, the whole team and I went on a retreat up to Ojai and just, you know, to have a creative retreat. And I just ordered a kombucha. We were at this little, you know, spot in Ojai and they were all having a drink. And I literally, because I have blood sugar issues, it really messes with me. But I didn't realize the kombucha they gave me was like highly alcoholic. And it was the first time I've been buzzed in years accidentally. And I was like, this is awesome, you know? But then it all set in. Like, I know I wouldn't sleep for 3 nights.
Yes.
I had a terrible day the next day. It messed with all of my blood sugar. It started to just shut down my body.
Right.
For that literal an hour and a half of a good time.
Exactly.
It was, and it does, like, I was mean the next day. I can't channel when I drink. Like there's so many things that it really shuts down for me. So, which is so unfortunate because I was the person who my ex's mom was Parisian and we love like nice rosé and, you know, really beautiful things. But I think the signals all came a long time ago too. As soon as I really started on this path, I went to go do mushrooms and Palm Springs and my body was like, nope, you don't deal with psilocybin. Had a full body rash for a month and a half.
Goodness.
Yeah, I mean, no drugs.
Okay,
Nothing's happening. I just think whoever the universe is like, you're supposed to be doing something and you're not going to get.
Well, I think this is the thing, you know, for somebody like you, and I guess for someone like me as well, I really see my path. I feel really committed to, being an expander, right? To actually helping to create an environment where people can elevate themselves. And I think to hold that space, it requires being really sensitive.
And having a very strong nervous system.
And having a very strong nervous system, but also being really sensitized to the needs of the collective.
Absolutely.
And that sensitivity, actually, I think is something I've always had. And I think it's one thing that made me a really good journalist because I was able to I've always been able to spot social trends like a gazillion miles
off. Such a gift, yeah.
But I think it's intuition. I think that's my sensitivity.
Exactly.
And I think having that kind of sensitivity in the very kind of macho, like bravado laden kind of British drinking culture was really hard on me.
Oh, yeah.
And so of course I learned to drink hold it down, you know?
Totally. And I think a lot of people drink for that very reason. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the book. I can't wait to read it. I'm so glad to know too that it's finally on the shelves that I can go pick it up. That's exciting.
No, I'll send you one.
Oh, great.
I should have bought, I didn't have room in my case to bring a bunch, but I'll send you one.
Carry on. Yeah, no, I'm sure you have quite a few appointments while you're here too.
Quite a few, yes.
So tell us, be an expander for relationships. You went from this terrible rock bottom relationship and your husband, give us that whole window.
He's a Pisces.
Oh, wow. Well, you have that Cancer moon. They're like, oh,
exactly.
So attracted
but
to
our charts actually are... There's a lot of amazing synergy, like lots of degrees. And yeah, it's just really, the charts are made to be together.
Wow.
So I met him only 6 months after I had freed myself. And I met him on a photo shoot. It was one of the first features I was doing for a magazine in the UK. It was actually, interestingly, this was 1998. It was Christmas 1998.
I think I was in eighth grade. This is awesome.
Okay. So it was 1998. And at the time, like the internet was a really new thing.
Yeah. I had an AOL address. Okay.
People were only just getting email and stuff. But anyway, the editor of this magazine, who actually was my third year journalism school tutor, so he commissioned me to write a piece about these, what he called them, urban lifestyle careerists, who were people who, because of this new technology, the internet, were able to create businesses in their bedrooms.
Back then. Wow.
Were able to not necessarily follow the corporate path, were able to create their own companies based on what they were passionate about and what they were interested in. And he, at the time, was running a nightclub music PR company, repping loads of cool artists like Daft Punk. And
whoa.
Like before they were Basement Jacks, like before they'd done anything. So he and his business partner came along to be on this photo shoot. Yeah, I guess I can call it love at first sight in the sense that as soon as I spoke to him, like there was like something there. There was just something and it wasn't like this wild chemistry or like mad sexual attraction. It was more like, oh, here you are. It was a real feeling of, oh, I can relax and here you are.
Wow.
And then I was like, and I've just got out of I don't want a relationship. I'm so enjoying being free and single. And so we dated for about 3 months before we even kissed.
Amazing.
Because I was just, as much as it just felt so meant to be from the beginning. I was very wary about like getting into anything. And I knew it couldn't be casual.
Yeah.
So, but then I moved in with him after 6 months. And then I proposed to him after a year.
Whoa, that is such an Aries.
So Aries, like unbelievably Aries of me.
I love that. Yeah, you guys were probably married 5 months after that.
No, like, it took 4 years.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But I love that. So, because like a lot of the manifestation formulas you know, kind of know from the talk is you chose your own worth. So you built your worth following your career. You finally got the courage. You jumped off the ledge to leave this relationship. And it's like, you magnetized in your
magnetized
person.
I magnetized him in.
Wow.
And we're together. We celebrated 20 years in
Incredible.
December last year. And it's still like we're as close, if not more so. But particularly having got sober curious together, like it's a whole other level of connection. There was already an incredible connection.
Wow.
But now it's like, I don't know, a soul meshing. There's so much trust and honesty and just
way deeper intimacy.
Oh my God, yes.
And so tell us about how he, I mean, that's incredible to be doing that together. That's the gift I think everybody hopes for when they go on a journey.
Yeah, I think so. And it wasn't like it was planned in a way. Like he wasn't necessarily interested in, he wasn't having the same issues or identifying the same issues as I was with alcohol. And he definitely wasn't on the same kind of healing path with the whole numinous thing. Mm-hmm. Like he's super fascinated, but he's also quite a kind of like British guy. Yeah,
which you probably really appreciate.
So actually, it's
balance,
kind of good.
Yeah.
He reads all the books. I don't read any self-help or spiritual books. Uh-huh. I only read novels.
Uh-huh.
And he reads them all, like Untethered Soul.
What?
Like, he's like all of them.
Such a Pisces. That's amazing.
He loves them.
Wow.
Yeah. But I think he just witnessing the positive impact on me of not drinking, he found himself going through quite a stressful time and was like, actually, you know, I think this would be a good thing to try to help me manage this stressful period. And it really worked out for him, and now he doesn't drink at all.
Incredible. Mm. I'm so lucky in the sense, it was actually really funny that when I was leaving my last relationship, my health issues were getting worse and worse. And I remember, and it was actually at the time I was helping Amanda Chantel Bacon with her social media. She was a major expander and she didn't drink because of her Hashimoto's. And I was like, I really feel like that's really going to help my health issues. So I was like, how am I going to go into the dating world? Los Angeles, I will say, is much easier than both New York and London. But it's like, how people are going to think I'm nuts, but I want to manifest somebody who doesn't drink. That was huge. And then, of course, I found a sober guy.
Very cool.
I know. So it's been amazing. That's really beautiful. And also to experience life in a relationship without that, you know, your dates don't revolve around that. You're weak. I mean, it's just such a different dynamic. It's incredible.
It really is. It was super awkward at first, actually.
I bet.
You know, because we had been, he was a nightclub PR. Like,
I know.
And I was newly loving alcohol and drugs and being like, oh, this is so good.
Oh yeah, blast. Yeah.
And we had a blast. Like we had so much fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember like the first, and I think as well, like going out for dinner on a Friday night, me not drinking, he doesn't want to sit there getting high while I'm like not. It's just awkward. It's awkward. So yeah, but I remember like the first few times we went out without any alcohol at all, it was a bit like, well,
what do we talk about?
This is different, isn't it?
It's awkward, yes. But so easy to navigate after
so
time.
So easy, and you just get used to it. It's so much of its conditioning.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, it's just a question of like confronting that. Oh, this is different. Oh, okay. I'm going to just like be with this
sit
with it, and it will become the new normal. Like it just does.
Like everything.
Like everything, yeah.
Give us your biggest rock bottom. On the floor, the world is over. Worst time.
Oh my God. You know what? The first thing that's coming up is the day after my book launch of my first book.
And so that was just assuming.
I felt, if any, I'm much more prone to anxiety than depressive kind of feelings. And I know depression is a big word, but like it was the first time that I could actually relate to what I'd read about what it felt like to suffer depression. The zero energy, complete numbness, like utter lethargy, hopelessness. And yeah, I woke up the morning after my book launch with that feeling and it stayed for a couple of weeks.
And what triggered it for you?
Like I said, I think I had so much of my self-worth. I placed so much of that in this book. And the launch party I organized was about a few days after it had actually come out. And I don't know, that we kind of like messed up with the guest list and like it was only half full and it just, there wasn't much of a buzz. Like no one really bought books. It was just kind of like, oh, it wasn't this big thing that I'd wanted it to be.
Yeah.
People were being lovely about it, but I didn't feel celebrated in the way that I had wanted to be celebrated.
The expectation.
Yeah, my expectation for it was tied up to all of this kind of these ideals about like a success, what a successful book was. And I just felt like it had failed. This is like a few days after it had come out. It sounds so dramatic.
No, it sounds very Aries.
Right.
Like all the Aries I know. Yeah, totally.
And so, yeah, in terms of, but you know, thinking about a rock bottom, I mean, those teenage years, like being anorexic in this relationship with a guy who was very sexually dominating and cut off from all of my family and friends. I think that was an extended rock bottom period in my life.
A big rut.
Yeah, exactly.
What has been the biggest inner child limiting belief you've had to overcome for success?
I think I'm in process with it at the moment. And it's around money. Yeah, my mom never really had any money and she was always had working tons of jobs to kind of like make ends meet. My father, on the other hand, came from quite a wealthy background. So he was always kind of supported in a way, but he didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this huge disparity between like my actual life as a child, which was sharing a bedroom with my brother when I was like 13.
And yeah, that's like so then, tough.
Like mother just not having any money and then money being withheld from the people around us that had money.
Mm.
Like her father, when he was, when he remarried, basically kind of said to her, you're not going to inherit anything. Like this, so the beliefs that I onboarded, and I'm very cognizant of them now, are that people with money are mean.
Mm-hmm.
Money is for other people.
Not me.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
So this is something I'm confronted with still.
And we have to get you opulence.
Yeah, please.
Oh
can
my
I
gosh,
get opulence?
Yeah, we'll
I
send
really
it
need
to
opulence.
Her. Yeah, you have to update us what happens after. You do it a few times.
Because it's ridiculous. I go around, oh, I'm not making enough money. I'm not making any money. No one wants to pay me. Why don't they like, oh. And then I look at my bank account and the fact that my husband and I just bought an apartment in New York.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, it's just your programming still that's rolling. Yeah.
And it's so frustrating because I know how much it's limiting, not just me, but my business and the people that I hire and all of it. Like,
absolutely.
So I'm really like, I'm deep in it right now. And I'll take opulence.
Yes, let's get you doing it. I mean,
okay.
I come from a very, very similar background and just nothing and being poor for so long and all of that good stuff. But no, fuck it. You deserve to make a lot of money.
Mm.
Like lots of money. Everybody does.
I want to make a lot of money because I have really big dreams and I know that the Numinous can't grow. It can't become what I know it can become without more investment.
Yeah.
Without more flow of finance through it.
Have you done your first round of investments yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh yeah, you need this before you do it.
That. Yeah.
Yes, this is exciting. Here goes 2019.
Yes, amazing.
Well, that's a great one. Thank you for sharing that because I'm sure 90% of the people listening can resonate with that. But it's also really, I think it's really expansive for somebody to hear an expander who is doing so well, who does have book deals, who obviously, you know, supporting yourself, but also still saying, I need to work on this and, you know, I could do more. So, and you
because
can.
Exactly. It's not necessarily, I mean, it is the reality in terms of the in and out flow of my bank balance, but it's also the anxiety I have around it.
Yeah.
I know that anxiety is limiting so
Flunking.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah. No, let's get it out of there. Forget
yeah.
it. Don't need it.
That
was,
no,
that was
done
so
with
2018.
It.
Yeah. 2018
exactly.
In the last so many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about biggest shadow self you've had to integrate? That just biggest insecurity.
Ooh, biggest shadow self. Maybe it is this ego part that wants recognition or that feels like I need external validation in order to feel worthy in order to have my self-worth kind of like be a thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that's probably it.
I think most people, that one's a big one, a big struggle.
Because ultimately I do what I do, like the heart of it is for the upliftment of others. And what makes me the absolute happiest is when someone reaches out on social media and my book has had a huge impact on them and it's helped them to like change, make changes in their life. Those are the things that really make me happiest.
Absolutely.
And that's ultimately why I do what I do. And yet there's also a part of me that's like, why don't I have more followers? And why aren't the New York Times covering my book? And I'm just like, oh, just shut up, will you?
Absolutely.
Shut up.
Yeah.
And I love you.
Yeah.
And I love you because I know it's a self-worth issue. Aww. So
I love that you're able to do that too. Oh, it's amazing. What would be your biggest tips or words of wisdom for somebody who is potentially going to pivot and really step off, jump off the cliff and follow their dream?
Oh my God. I've been thinking about this recently in terms of those, that kind of like just that leap moment can be so fearful. And it can take, I've taken years to make, like leaping from out of that first relationship for at least 2 years, I would lie in bed every night, like I've got to leave, I've got to get out. Yeah. And then just not. But the leap itself is so exhilarating.
Oh,
when you
it is.
Finally get the courage to do yes. it, it's like, oh yeah. So I think just like take the leap. And I know that that's so not easy to do.
But it's one more voice saying it.
It's one more voice. Take the leap. And ultimately, if you don't, you're going to get pushed.
Yeah.
Like something's going to
earthquakes you. Yeah.
Something is going to make it happen. So take the leap. But I guess, and I actually really appreciate what you say about having a bridge job. And as we discussed in the beginning, and I think you mentioned in the Good Fest thing about having a fuck it fund.
Yeah, totally a fuck you fund.
A fuck you fund.
Fuck you, I'm leaving. It's fuck you, I'm out of this job.
Don't make it any harder on yourself than totally. It needs to be. Like look out for your material needs. So that you have some level of security in order to kind of make that leap.
And strength so you don't go back. That's always yeah. my big. Or like people who try to take that pivot too early but aren't expanded enough, then if they fail, it's double harder to do it next time when you are. So it's like you get jaded. Mm-hmm. So I think those are such two, you know, words of the wise. And then taking the leap. That's such a big one. You deserve it.
And as an Aries, I guess like I feel like I was born, I've got Sagittarius rising too. So like,
wow.
I'm kind of born to leap, but I find it really hard to
yeah.
leap.
Like, yeah, absolutely. That so, Cancer is like,
yeah, oh my God, the Cancer moon will just cling yeah. on, like it totally overrides everything else. Yeah.
It's a beautiful one though. It's what gives you that great aesthetic. And all that cardinal and the two. Wow. What's your Venus?
Pisces.
Oh, wow.
Conjunct his.
Wow.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
What is his moon and rising?
His moon and rising are Virgo.
The best.
So much. I have
both
zero
double.
Earth. So he's all my earth. And
your
he
ground.
Really has that kind of ground. He is like the ground. He's literally the ground. The ground beneath my feet.
Oh,
you know?
The best partner to have.
Yeah.
Lucky.
He really is.
Mine's a double Virgo too. So
oh,
I'm
cool.
So brave.
Yeah. Just like super practical. It allows me to kind of like just be all my fire and water, like intuitive creativeness. And he's just always there, like holding it down.
Oh, the perfect balance.
It's pretty sexy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what do you have in store for the next year ahead? What's your list?
Well, I'm in a very interesting point actually. I have this book out which I feel extremely passionate about and which I feel is sparking a movement, and I really want to be present for that and to be able to give that all my energy and to really guide that ship. And I have the Numinous, which is needing some investment and needing like a next kind of, you know, it needs a projector.
Yeah, next level projector.
It needs a projector
yes.
and some investment. Like
a projector, preferably who's worked and secured investment.
There we go.
That's the perfect.
That's what I'm calling in for the Numinous so that I can step off that and be more focused on the book. And then I have Moon Club with Alexandra as well, which is
Tell
growing in
that.
Beautiful ways.
She's told us a little bit, but where can people really, what can they expect from that?
So Moon Club is, it's a membership program co-hosted by myself and Alexandra. And the idea with it, it came about because we realized that living in cities like New York and LA, we had tons of access to moon circles, spiritual workshops, communities, even individuals who you could have conversations about and explore practices like astrology and tarot with without fear of being ridiculed or kind of like cast out. But we realized that certainly across the US and in other places in the world, that wasn't the case. And actually, it can be really hard for people to find communities to explore that side of themselves with. And it can be very isolating. So we wanted to create a space where people come together and learn and explore more about their spiritual growth together.
Amazing.
So that's the idea for the community, to make it really accessible. And we do now have Moon Club ambassadors leading circles all over the
world.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, that's incredible.
Amazing. As far away as like the Middle East and Brazil and all over the US and in the UK. It's Yeah, it's really grind.
We have to get our unblocked village with your moon circles.
That
or like do
cool.
a bridge or something. That'd be so fun.
That would be really
can
fun.
Can manifest with one of them or something.
That would be could really be a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So there, yeah, people get, I create like a lunar planner for the month ahead, which is like a 25-page PDF all about the coming moon cycle.
You do that every month?
Yes.
God, you generators. That's amazing.
Yeah, we generate a lot.
I'm like, wow.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. So they get that monthly, and then Alexandra guides live and recorded ritual journeys, and it's really beautiful.
Amazing. Well, congrats. Yeah, anybody who's looking for that, go head over. That sounds amazing. And then last but not least, your words of advice for being in marriage for 20 years. What can you impart? Because I'm sure there's so many ups and downs that go with that and all arounds.
Well, I think besides, I mean, I do think that that kind of, that connection that we've always had, like, is quite unique to us, I guess. But having said that, yes, there've been ups and downs. But I think what really makes it work is that we both are really kind to each other. We both really like each other. Mm-hmm. We both give each other the benefit of the doubt.
That's amazing.
You know, and we're also both pretty independent.
Like, we are too. So autonomous.
You know, I'll often go off on work trips for a couple of weeks, a month, and people are like, oh, do you miss him? Do you talk on the phone every day? I'm like, no, I sometimes don't speak to him for like 10 days when I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, we very much have our own lives. And he said that too. He'll say that to people. He's like, yeah, it's great being married to an Aries. She's just too busy doing her own thing to try and tell me what to do.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah. I think my friend Jenna Zoe, who also, she does human design as well. Mm. And we're both Aquarians. And we always say our partners are like, they're the ice queens when they go away. Because we're like out of sight, out of mind. We're like just in our own worlds, meditating, never checking home. Like, but same with Aries.
Yeah. But I think it's like, it means that we have space to kind of like be our own people still. And then when we come back together, there's just like, there's still friction, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. My partner and I, because we have the retreat house and I'm looking to get one in the Pacific Northwest, I'll probably be living a month at each. And so he'll just cruise up on the weekends, and it's a great dynamic.
Very cool.
It's awesome. If it works for the couple. But.
If it works for the couple. And I do think that there's something about having a business or a career that you're really passionate about, but almost like you have similar loving feelings.
It is. It feels a lot
to the life I've created for myself and to the work I do and for the people that I work with. So yeah, it's like not all of my kind of romantic love in a way is confined to my relationship.
I love that. Such good advice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on here.
Thanks for having
me. Do you have any retreats or anything coming up?
Yes. Well, actually, Alexandra and I are leading two retreats.
Okay.
One in May at 1440 Multiversity.
That's the one that's in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Okay, she was talking about that one. Great.
And then one at Kripalu in July.
Fantastic.
So they're going to be two opportunities to come and actually hang out and do some deep diving and connect.
What will that... She told us a bit about it. What will the deep diving look like in these?
Well, the first one, we've called it Manifesting the Matriarchy.
Oh, yeah. She was telling us about that.
And so it's really how so much about Moon Club. Mm-hmm. It's about honoring the lunar. It's about honoring the feminine and the power of being in our feminine and not necessarily feeling like in a business world, we have to conform to the very kind of patriarchal masculine ideology that is in so much of the business world. Mm-hmm. And that actually, yes, you can be a feminine, feeling, emotive, intuitive leader and you can be powerful from that place. So that's what we're going to be teaching on the first retreat. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've come up with a title for the second one. We did one at Kripalu last summer called Find Your Voice, which was really about finding the confidence to really speak up about what you believe in and who you are and to recognize the value of your story and what you have lived in terms of how that can shape your offering to the world.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. We're so grateful. Thank you for taking the time to come here today. I know this will be a busy trip. And everybody go check out The Numinous and go pick up Sober Curious.
Thank you so much, Lacey. It's been great meeting you.
You as well. Bye, everyone. Have a great weekend.